You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stukats Podcast.
For a long time now, Ron McGill, for free, I might add, has been a weekly guest on this show. It is very popular. If you wish to help Ron McGill with some of the things he cares about or believes in, his endowment, it is substantive, and you can find it online without getting in any trouble at work for searching for his endowment. And if you want to help the animals, he is doing some things that genuinely care for the animals, and you can get rid of the bureaucracy and all the layers that you have to go to sometimes when you're giving, and know that you can help the animals if you're doing it through Ron McGill. So we urge you to check that out. I saw that one of the things you're doing at Miami Zoo, Ron, that you told us about, that eagle cam has now borne fruit. That is a fairly rare thing, right? To be able to see on camera, eagles taking care of an egg, right?
It's fantastic, Dan. And I actually watched, they don't only have one egg, they now have two eggs. She laid another egg on Saturday night. And it is just fantastic to see it happen live. I mean, I watched her. She was like going in labor. You can see her on the cam. She stands up and she ruffles her feathers and she starts shaking. And you see her kind of push once and push two. And then all of a sudden, and then she turns around and stands up. And there's the second egg. And she did the same thing with the first egg. And I got to tell you something, I got goosebumps. It just moved me to tears to watch this happen live, to have this intimate window into the world of bald eagles 85 feet up in the air on a camera at night. It's infrared camera, so you see it like it's daytime. So it's fantastic. And now they're there just incubating the eggs. You know, they named the eagles. I had nothing to do with naming them, but they named the eagles Ron and Rita after me and my wife.
Wow.
You had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, nothing at all.
I had no input on that. Sure. That was a surprise.
Sure. Named them Look at Me and Louie.
What a coincidence.
Happenstance, bro.
What are the odds?
Are you guys done?
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah.
Okay, let me go with the rest of the story. So anyway, they named Rita Ron, which was a huge honor for me, but also made me very nervous because, you know, so many things can go wrong. I mean, gosh, one of the parents could die from, you know, ingesting a rat with rodenticide with poison in it. It's happened to eagles before. An eagle can abandon the nest. The eggs can get predated on. Ants can get in there. There's so many things that could go wrong. The bottom line is only 50% of bald eagle pairs successfully fledged young. So there's a lot of challenges ahead. So when you get a name associated with it, if something bad happens, all of a sudden you've got this horrible stain on your name because they named him Ron, that bird was a sucky father or whatever, you know. So it's a huge honor, but at the same time, a huge risk.
Deadbeat.
That's why Disney refused to allow us to name a hippo Dan Le Batard and then tried to buy you off with a $10,000 donation and then we had to leave.
That is true. But for the record, Dan Le Batard is thriving, is doing just wonderfully. As a matter of fact, Dan Le Batard may be getting a little vowel of his own pretty soon.
What is happening over there? What are you saying? What do you mean? You mean that the Zoo Dan Le Batard is going to get a playmate?
Yes. As a matter of fact, Zoo Dan Le Batard may be going on a excursion pretty soon to meet a set up date, so to speak. It's kind of like planned dating, computer dating. And the computer says that there's a female, I believe she is in Pennsylvania. I got to double check, but that she is awaiting to feel some of that Dan love.
All right.
You want more than dating though, right?
Yeah. It's an arranged marriage.
It is an arranged marriage. That's the best way to put it.
How does that get chosen?
But they're both happy with that.
How does that get chosen? Why wouldn't you? Why do people have to be, or why do hippos have to be imported in? And why can't it just be more natural than that?
Well, because we look at the genetic background of the hippos, what their genealogy is and what the best way is to create the most diverse gene pool so that their offspring are the healthiest they can possibly be. You know, we don't want it to be like, you know, royalty where cousins are marrying cousins just because you got to keep it in the family. You got to keep it out of the family. And we are very careful in accredited zoos to make sure we know which animals are related to other animals. And, you know, generally speaking, we will ship the male to the female. Because we'd like the female to always be more comfortable in her surroundings and her environment there. Yeah. So we'll ship the male to the female once the recommended breeding is made.
It's very progressive. The male is getting flued out, huh?
Yeah. The male's the one that gets flown out. You know, listen, in a perfect world, we wouldn't even fly the male out. This is going to sound a little depressing for most guys because right now we use a lot of artificial insemination too. We would just collect his sperm and fly that up there in a tube, which is a lot cheaper and a lot less risky for the animal itself. Because, you know, when you ship an animal, you move an animal, there's a risk there. So we are using artificial insemination. We had a rhino born here not too long ago as a result of artificial insemination. Now, that, I understand, takes the fun out of it for a lot of the animals. But in reality, it's a very effective way to keep a good diluted gene pool while out without risking the animals, you know, getting sick or hurt during transport. And the other thing is, you know, misconception is, oh, you're going to put them together and they're going to like each other. I don't know if Dan's going to like Val or vice versa. They could get next to each other and they may hate each other. So we might not get reproduction there. But it's a chance we got to take.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, Ron. Like, how do you even know that Dan the rhino is interested, or Dan the hippo is interested in a female hippo, for example?
Generally speaking, Dan is always interested. It's the female that generally is more picky.
Hell yeah.
In the animal world, guys, and listen, if you guys are really happy in your own relationships, you know this, it's in the human world too. The females select. The females select the male they want to be with. The male usually is like, give me a donut. I don't care. Okay. They're kind of single-minded after something.
A donut to have sex with. That's what he's saying. Yes, that's exactly right.
I'm just trying to throw an analogy out there that generally males tend to be much more focused on the physical part of sex. Females tend to be much more selective in the mate because they are the ones that usually end up raising the offspring, and they want to make sure they have healthy offspring.
I could totally see Dan Levitar and the hippo being more interested in just the donut.
Hey, Ron, you've been referring to the female hippo as Val, but what is the actual name of the female hippo?
I don't know. I'm going to have to check on that. I just know her as a number in the stud book right now.
Wow. Is she wearing red lipstick?
Dan Levitard,
like, trying to present herself?
Dan Levitard the hippo has a number in a stud book.
Look at you.
Congrats.
He's a player.
Is he a little black book?
Amin, you got a question for Ron McGill?
Ron, I was watching a nature show the other day, and they were talking about river dolphins. Is that a thing that's been around for a long time and been known that there are some freshwater dolphins?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was with those freshwater dolphins in the Amazon. They're pink. They're pink dolphins, and they actually have vestigial eyes. Their eyes are hardly functional in a sense because they're murky. The water's so murky there because of the tannins in the Amazon River that they depend much more on the echolocation than they do on the eyesight. But they're a really unique animal. If you know, I'm sure Stugatz has already Googled it. They have a very long, very thin snout and a very big bulbous head, and they have this wonderful pink coloration to them. They're the pink river dolphins of the Amazon. They're fantastic.
Ron, I read that there's a 1 or 2 year old penguin named Pingu who wandered from its home in Antarctica and wound up on a rocky New Zealand beach almost 2,000 miles away. How often does that kind of thing happen in the wild?
Not terribly often, but I've heard it happening. You know, we all, here in Florida, in South Florida, we get a lot of birds that were way off their migration route. You know, they get blown off by a storm, they get off direction, and this is where they land. And same thing happens with penguins. You know, if they get blown off in a storm, a current takes them the wrong way, they'll pick up the current and they'll land where they land. Again, it's not common, but it's not unheard of by any stretch of the imagination. We've heard of animals, not just birds, but other animals too, that get caught on currents, you know, caught on debris in the ocean and float to another place and establish populations there.
What was Tony roaring with laughter about?
Dad, what was the name of that penguin?
Pingu.
P-I-N-G-U. Yeah, I knew it when he said it. I said, that's pretty close.
You don't know what you're saying.
That shouldn't have been bad
for my Hispanic listeners.
You don't know what you're saying, Greg.
I mean, it's P-I-N-G-U. I'm looking at it.
Yeah, let's all say P-I-N-G-U. 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 And Pingu was his name.
Tony was
killing me.
Tony was roaring with laughter as soon as Greg Cody said that, with no knowledge whatsoever of what it is he was saying. Chris, you didn't know either, right? You were informed by the Latin speakers.
I mean, I kind of knew that it sounded something like that.
You okay?
He's just laughing.
Oh, no. This is not a good one. Get it out.
You sound maternal there, Stugatz. That's very nice of you.
I care about Greg.
Ron, which animal sleeps the least?
You know, are you talking about, you know, mammals, big vertebrate animals? I would think, I don't I don't know. I think like giraffe and elephants, they sleep in little tiny spurts. So they don't sleep extensive periods of time. But I don't know cumulatively how much they're actually sleeping.
How about sharks? Can you explain? I know you've explained parts of this to us, the turning off of part of the brain. But it's hard to imagine fish sleeping.
No, fish do sleep. And some sharks have more of a challenge because some sharks need to have water constantly flowing through their gills to be able to get enough oxygen. But sharks adapt by finding places where they get current that will actually run that water through their gills without them actually having to swim, so they can rest that way. Listen, nature's incredible the way it adapts. You know, people say, oh, well, a shark must never sleep because it needs to always have water moving, so it's got to be swimming. No, a shark will find sometimes where there's a certain current that the current itself will do the work so the shark can be immobile for periods of time getting the rest that it needs.
Ron, I was watching CBS Sunday Morning, Jane Pauley. It's my favorite show. And she was
talking. One of my favorites too, buddy.
I love it.
They did a feature on aging and how the tortoise can live till it's 150 years old simply because it moves slowly. It takes things slowly, not a ton of stress. I'm wondering, is there something to that, A, and B, what is the oldest animal in the animal kingdom?
Well, the oldest animal that we know of in the animal kingdom, I believe, is the Greenland shark. And it's believed to get to be 300 years old.
Wow.
Look it up, Stu, guys. I'm sure you always double fact check me on this stuff. But the Greenland shark, I believe, is the oldest. Other than that, it is a tortoise. I believe it was over 150 years old. Tortoises, generally speaking, are the oldest land vertebrates on Earth. They can live over 150 years. And there is something to be said about, you know, just taking things slowly. It's like, you know, people who eat slowly, it's a tortoise versus the hare type of mentality. Constant, but methodical, yet slow, relaxed is what's going to give you a longevity that you're looking for.
You have a couple of very old turtles at the zoo, do you not?
We do. We have Goliath, who's one of my favorites. He's approximately 100 years old, 525 pounds. You personally met him out here, Dan. And, he's one of the few animals that I have worked with here the entire 40 plus years that I've been here. So is Goliath.
You said that turtle is one of your favorites. Who's your least favorite at the zoo?
My least favorite at the zoo. You know, I'm not. This is going to sound terrible. It's not that I don't like them. I'm not a big fan of camels. Because camels have just some bad habits.
They spit a lot, right? Yeah.
They're assholes.
Oh, they also urinate all over themselves, and they take their tail and they flash it all over the place when they're urinating. They'll take their tail between their legs and they'll splash you with the urine, and it's just an awful smell. It's horrible. So, and then they do this sound, you know, where they have a soft palate in their mouth. When they get agitated or excited, they make a sound that kind of goes, and this thing comes out of the side of their mouth. It looks like they're puking out their guts, and it stinks wretched. It's just not a very attractive animal. And having said that, they have been incredible beasts of burden for humankind for centuries, if not millennium. So they're a wonderful animal, an incredible animal, just not one of my favorite animals. Not something I'd want to live with in a garage for a while.
Splash.
Guillermo, put it on the poll, please, at Lebatard Show. Are camels assholes? Yes or no?
Oh, God, I'd say that, Dan.
Well, you did.
No, you sort of did. I'm not saying
insinuated
that.
Insinuated it.
Greg Cody said it. Greg Cody said it. You didn't say it, Ron.
Oh, okay. Thank you,
Ron implied it.
And Ron, I will tell you, I looked up the Greenland shark. I mean, that thing looks amazing for 300 years old. It's a young 300 years old. It is.
The National Ocean Service like says they can. The National Ocean Service says they can live to be over 500 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't know how they document that. See, because we have never tagged a Greenland shark to. Say, okay, we've tagged it now, and then, you know, 500 years later, it's still alive. How do you really document that? I'm going to go with the 300 years, which is still mind-blowing. And hopefully, you know, all the listeners have learned something, and probably most listeners have never heard of the Greenland shark, but this is an incredible animal that can live for centuries.
But Ron, if you're willing to believe and buy in on 300 years old, I mean, what's the next step to 500 years old besides 200 years and two centuries?
Okay.
He did realize that as soon as he did the math on it.
Well, I mean, if you're willing, if you're going to sit here and tell me it's 300 years old, what's the big leap to 500 years old? I mean, come on.
That's right.
Why is one?
I'll tell you what, Stugatz. Yeah. How tall are you? How tall are you?
5'8" on a good day.
Okay, I'm 6'6".
Right.
If we stand next to each other, is it going to be a big difference?
Yeah.
Yeah, big, huge difference, right?
Yep.
So nobody's going to say, well, what's the big leap? I'll pick this guy to play on my basketball team. He's 5'8". What's the big leap to 6'6"? What's the big difference? What's the difference? But what's the big leap there?
So in 1700.
It's a huge leap, Stugatz. It's huge.
But you're saying no one knows, so you're buying in on 300, yet you're not willing to buy in on it living till 500 years or 1,000 years.
No one tagged these fish in 1721, Ron.
I say I'm more willing to buy into the 300 than I am into the 500.
Okay.
The National Ocean Service uses 500. Carbon dating to figure out the ages of these sharks.
Wow.
And
Christ.
They have given a range of from between 272 and 512 years.
So there you go. See, guys, what you learn from me here is that I tend to always go onto the conservative edge. I think 300 or 272 is wow enough to not have to go to 500. People who like to exaggerate things, there's no need to do it. 272 is mind-blowing enough.
Yeah, but the wow factor is everything. 512 just sounds better.
You're talking to the wrong person, Ron, when you say to Stugatz, hey, you don't need to exaggerate things. Yes, he does. He's got a need for it the same way. Put it on the poll, Guillermo. What does Stugatz need more, oxygen or exaggerating things? Billy, what do you have for Ron McGill?
That was it.
Okay, very good. See you later, Ron. Good talking to you. Thank you, sir.
Good one, guys. We'll see you later.
See you, Ron.
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Are you heading to the airport on a long flight? Or do you need something after your flag football game? Well, if I was you, I would definitely go with Liquid IV just for the electrolytes so you don't feel run down. And I know for me, Liquid IV helps me start my day in the morning, and it helps give me the energy to do stuff like cut my yard and wash my car and work out and just face the day. And you can get your energy back while drinking something that's delicious. And when I say delicious, you can pick from flavors like pear, white peach, green grape, lemon lime, and more. Liquid IV is non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration using code DAN today at liquidiv.com.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Libertard.
I heard the hotel industry is moving away from providing shampoo and soap.
Oh, don't get me started on them.
Yeah?
Do not get me started on hotels and the stuff that they do.
Right, what they take from me, I feel like I'm entitled to take something from them. Thank you, Billy.
They're going to throw away the shampoo. They're going to throw away the soap. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the sheets, and I'm talking about the towels.
Stugatz.
Oh, we really care about the environment, so please hang up your towels. Get out of here. You just don't want to wash these towels, because it's going to cost you money to wash these towels. All right? This whole thing about you're saving the whales or you're saving the turtles or whatever because I put my towel on a hanger. It is so full of it. All right? You just don't want to give me fresh towels every day. Just call it what it is. Tell me you don't want to give me fresh towels. I'm still going to throw it on the floor. All right? I feel like water is a renewable resource. And you're not really saving the ocean by using water to clean my towel, are you? Am I missing something? What am I missing?
Nail right on the head.
Am I missing something?
The end of the story.
This is the Don Libertard Show with the Stugatz.
Everyone listening to this does realize, right, we are right smack dab in the middle of seismic tectonic shift in college sports. We're right in the middle of it. This has not happened where you get bang, bang, 1 weekend. Whoa, Lincoln Riley, Brian Kelly didn't see either of those things coming. And it's because the money in that sport is shifting. It's around the SEC and Notre Dame's not big enough for you. when college football and this kind of money comes calling. You can make the face that you're making, Jessica, but that's what just happened yesterday.
It's not because they're not big enough for him. He was there for 11 years. It was clearly big enough for him for 11 years.
When he was a lesser candidate than he is now, when you're going to the top of the...
He had Eagles head coach rumors like 5 years ago.
Jessica.
It's okay, Jess.
You can keep
not
doing
mad.
This.
I'm not. Okay. Do not write right, in the paper fine. That I was
okay.
mad.
Don't. Angry. That's fine.
But that's the shift. The shift angry. Is that it's gotten bigger. Like the LSU job has gotten bigger.
You're in the middle of this commerce intersection. And
you're massive.
What has just happened is somebody in the SEC came calling for Brian Kelly. And Notre Dame's holier-than-thou thing, led by Brian Kelly... Just got bought by the SEC. And Lincoln Riley was like, you know what? Don't want to go do that with Oklahoma in SEC. I'm coveted. I can work anywhere.
You've mentioned that a couple of times. I don't want to go to the SEC. And I don't think he's afraid of that. Here's what it is. $110 million. Use her PJ. You and your family get to live in LA. Does that sound cool?
It is easier, Mike. It's an easier path as a coach to be in the Pac-12 than it is in the SEC get to the playoffs, Mike.
But Brian Kelly just took a harder path, and I don't think it's because he's got a tougher gym.
No, what I would say to you is he took a tougher path to winning, big winning. What he didn't take a tougher path to was great players. It all just got easier for him because he doesn't have to apply the same academic standard. He could just go hire recruiters. He got the success that people get late in life when you've had a lot of accomplishments. Go get more money for doing less. For doing less. You could go to LSU. The pressure is going to be higher. The stakes are going to be higher. But you're going to be able to get the players that you want and not worry about the admissions office coming in here and saying you need a 1,200 SAT. Just go make Joe Burrow's team. Go ahead. LSU has told you by just giving Orgeron $17 million to go the hell away. We will sell our soul to get to the top of the most commercial conference that there is in minor league professional sports. And now Brian Kelly, these guys are going to start lining up for these deli jobs after we've spent this much time celebrating the CEO as leader. And it's not being acknowledged that you're going to get players in the SEC. Look at how quickly it happened for Kiffin and Leach. Like, if the smart coaches start going there, they're going to have the advantages of money and recruiting. Brian Kelly was smart to get there before others. That's a great job. And they can get all the players that they want. And he can now work less. It's less hard. Notre Dame makes it harder in their own admissions office. With their own standards, they make it harder than LSU does.
Work less, get paid more. That's the dream.
I think you can make that argument also the other way, though, which is that now he's coaching against Nick Saban, Lane Kiffin.
But he cashes in. He wins right now.
But
he won today. It doesn't matter what happens now.
I just think that if you're going to make the argument that he's going to make more money to work less hard because the recruiting got easier, I think you should also maybe admit that, like, the coaching and the expectations in LSU, like, not that they're not big around Notre Dame, but LSU is going to be very, very hard in that conference.
Yeah, if success and titles is what he cared about, I think he probably... It's easier to win a title at LSU because I have very recent history to suggest not very good coaches have actually done it over there. But I do think that this MASH unit of power programs in the SEC, you see what happened at Florida this year? You see what happened to Auburn? You see what's been happening to Tennessee? I think that's going to be the norm. People are going to get really frustrated because they've gone from programs that maybe lose one, two times a year to now all of a sudden Oklahoma's going to go to three, possibly four losses a year just because of competition. I don't think they really know what they're getting into by this conference expansion. I think people like Lincoln Riley have the right idea. It's why I actually think a place like Miami in the Coastal Division has some appeal. Because if you care about success, titles, getting yourself to the point that you can get the contract that Brian Kelly eventually got, because yeah, sure, Texas, LSU, Bama, they're all going to be there with the money eventually because they're going to have three lost seasons when this whole thing plays out.
The recruits lining up for Brian Kelly to go to Baton Rouge are the ones that Alabama and Georgia don't get. I mean, he's starting off in third place, arguably a distant third place in his league. So he's making a great move financially. Is he making a great move in terms of being able to get to the CFP top four every year? I don't know. That's questionable.
The only thing I'll disagree with you there is that, like, Louisiana itself in-state recruiting there is huge. And a lot of those, like that part, the in-state recruiting in Louisiana are people that Brian Kelly is now going to be able to get. And it's just like built into your backyard there. Like the Louisiana high school football system is
well, he has to get the right guys on staff though.
Well, but I feel like
it's not like Indiana where there's like one five-star a year. Or two. Like it's a completely different recruiting scene.
Am I looking at this wrong? When I'm marveling at you guys obsessing on the micro, and I'm just flabbergasted by the macro. This whole game just changed. These guys, what the amount of money that we're talking about for these CEOs, the game in the last 2 days has produced two stories that the last 20 years haven't provided, where a coach that was coveted, no one saw him changing leadership spots because everything's different now that we're talking about the business of the SEC and who's competing for what and who's willing to sacrifice morals. You guys are talking about this individual region stuff. I'm looking at the entire sport and saying, wait a minute, if Mel Tucker's getting $95 million and he just got swamped by Ohio State immediately after that contract was signed, what else is coming next when everyone realizes that Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly are just first to this trough? They're the first ones to notice, wait a minute, I could use one of these schools and dwarf Saban's salary. Well, you can't because contractually
he gets a raise.
Because his contract
is Saban is loving it.
He's just waiting to see what happens at Oklahoma in case they open up coffers.
Well, I thought the most, Jack Swarbrick just gave a press conference, and I thought the most interesting question was, like, there have been two hires, like you said, in the last 2 days that have had just like seismic shifts in college football and hiring and coaching, blah, blah, blah. And his answer, which was, I think, the only interesting answer he gave during the press conference, was that, like, I haven't really had time to let it all sink in, like what's happened the last couple of days in college athletics. But, you know, you wonder if a university is the right place for this type of thing to take place. Like I'm paraphrasing here. I don't have the exact quote, but I think that it's just what we talked about with Skipper over the summer when Oklahoma and Texas moved to the SEC, which is that the college football machine is getting farther and farther away from needing universities to be the place where they exist. And will this be the case in 10 years? Will there be a Super League? Like, it seems like that's where it's
headed. I just, the part that I find fascinating over the last 2 years is it took a pandemic to unspool the thread of pay a player. Oh, shit. It's all business. Now business is on. Pay players? Okay, never mind about it. Portals, transfer portals. Okay, we could start dismantling this whole idea of amateurism step by step. And of course, the guys who are going to get paid the most in this system, of course, are going to be the Brian Kellys and the CEO types who are leaders.
Brian Kelly was sitting in someone's living room recruiting a kid to Notre Dame when the news broke that he was going to LSU. I mean, it's a business.
It is rarely. The transactions, Jessica, the transactions are rarely this bold and brazen. Hey, LSU comes calling. Notre Dame's holier than thou. Can we have what you guys have? And he's like, yep, suitcase of cash, I'm out the door. Never mind whatever I give voice to of being like South Bend in my heart or a Michigan man. Jim Harbaugh's out here.
I love what he's doing. Jim Harbaugh is winning the day.
Jim Harbaugh is doing the thing that is that wasn't quaint 3 days ago, but now that Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly have done what they've done, listen to what Jim Harbaugh is doing.
So Harbaugh is saying, hey, you want to leave Notre Dame and go there? You want to leave Oklahoma and go there? Well, here's what I'm going to do. Any bonuses I make this year by being the Michigan head football coach, I am going to give them to workers at the University of Michigan who lost money during COVID.
I mean, I'm a Michigan man.
We're talking about holier than thou, like Jim Harbaugh. That's all. Really? Like it's a great thing that he did.
Nice thing
he's
that he's
great.
Doing.
But I'm saying, yes. Like that,
and
like,
he's staying for now.
Michigan got so much great. Like for some reason, Michigan had to suck against Ohio State for 5 years for people to be all of a sudden like, wow, congrats to Jim Harbaugh on beating Ohio State. It's Michigan. Like they're blue blood. Why is everyone suddenly like, wow, good job, Michigan? Like you did it.
Because they had the enormous win of the weekend.
That's what I'm mad about.
Yeah. That's what
mad about Michigan.
Did you guys know that Washington hired a head football coach?
Florida hired a head football coach.
I found out that yesterday Washington hired a football coach this morning.
Really?
Yeah. They hired the Fresno State coach. I guess that's an all right hire.
It could be the best of the hires.
How do you think the Lincoln Riley? How do you think the Lincoln Riley thing came about? By the way, because Carson Palmer went public with names, and it was a big job, but Lincoln Riley was never linked to that. And I saw an interesting quote from the AD over at USC. We didn't, when we started this whole thing, it was not our intention to set out and make a move that would change college football with one of the biggest power plays ever. Do you think Lincoln Riley's agent just called and said, hey, what's up? Because that's the way that this kind of feels to me, with how quick it broke. And hey, if you guys want Lincoln Riley, we'll need this, this, and this. You're actually in this game.
Lincoln Riley's agent knows in ways that we can't possibly, not only what he wants from his life in every respect, that's what the guy is paid 10% to do, but he's also paid to know what it is that makes Lincoln Riley unhappy at work that we don't know about. And I don't know what would be appealing about
Or
at home, correct.
Right. Where do you want to live?
The agent knows those things, and we might never. The thing about the last couple of days, that I don't know how much more this is going to happen, but we've seen in basketball the way that the transaction infatuates an audience and makes this stuff super addictive. We've seen with fantasy sports the way that we get proprietary about the transactions, and we're doing fantasy sports bigger than it's ever been, and it's a pretty dumb exercise given that the guys that you liked, you have no way of predicting whether Dalvin Cook or Derrick Henry or any of these guys or McCaffrey or all these guys who are hurt now, who are killing you in these fantasy leagues because they're hurt. You have no way of being able to be good at that. But because this is all something that is soap opera and transaction related, college football the last couple of days has given us this best thing that we like for content fodder, a surprise that represents huge change and makes one program instantaneously win the day for $15 million a year while another program searches for its new leader. The coaches is the transaction pieces, the big name coaches. That's a way that you get people talking about college football on a Tuesday, that generally it gets swamped by Sunday's football games in the pros and even last night's Washington-Seattle game.
Dan, they were so seismic, especially Lincoln Riley. We were talking about it on Sunday and Monday. Like, the NFL, you're right, usually engulfs those stories, not this
one. I'm saying that this is how college football becomes more and more professional, bigger and bigger. It is, Stugatz, college football as a passion entity and a regional pride is if football professionally wins the day across sports, like, college football is up there with all of the major sports, interest, merch, money. And you're just seeing now that the money's actually being dispersed all over the place. Now you're seeing it flow and people aren't talking about lacrosse and Title IX. It's just like, how do I get Brian Kelly? What, $15 million a year? No problem. Like, I can't believe that Saban's agent was smart enough to get the contract clause of, you will make me the highest paid coach no matter how crazy this shit gets. That's how it's written in the contract.
Very
insightful. It's written in Saban's contract, no matter how crazy this shit gets, Saban gets $1 more than everybody.
Like he deserves it.
That's a good agent. That's an agent who's earned his 10%. Like, what a contract clause. Wait a minute, Mel Tucker's making how much? I'm Nick bleeping Saban. That's right. What just happened the last couple of days. It's nuts, and it's commerce spilling wild over what was amateurism 2 years ago. The first thread was the pandemic and players being like, hey, why aren't we at the Lincoln Riley's conference? Why aren't you paying us? why in USC players, why aren't you paying us? We're not playing until you pay us. And then that thread, one of the great sports injustices of our lifetime, the players not being paid, has opened up the Wild West of commerce, of this is going to be bought and sold now. The illusion of amateurism, like, it's a giant myth wrapped in the dollar, like a giant myth. And now the coaches are cashing in on the dollars.
And athletes still aren't paid. I think that people like think that because name and license is a thing now and you can make money, that it means that the university's money or the TV rights that the players are generating goes back to their pockets. And that's not the case. And that's why, like, when you think about it, college football is really gross. And seeing these numbers thrown out there for Mel Tucker, for Brian Kelly, for Lincoln Riley, for any of these
for
top
Hugh
coaches.
Hugh Freeze at Liberty. Hugh Freeze, who like everything
oh,
he did
on
wrong
the move, by
made
the way.
Mississippi matter. Yes, yeah, put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is Hugh Freeze on the move, even though he just signed a contract for $4 million?
On the lamb is more like it.
That just increases the buyout. I mean, Manny Diaz was a Temple coach for 12 hours. You know, that just increases their buyout.
And maybe again.
$4.5 million, that was a big investment from a school like Liberty. That's what Manny Diaz makes down here.
A few weeks ago, there was a conversation when Mike Tomlin was linked with the USC job. Isn't it offensive that Mike Tomlin would be linked with the USC job? He's a successful NFL head coach. Does the last 2 days kind of puncture that? That like, I saw that Brian Kelly is making more than 26 of the 32 NFL head coaches.
Jess is shaking her head no. And I will tell you, direct quote from Brian Kelly, I think Mike Tomlin had it right.
Yeah, that was a couple of months ago.
But
yeah.
I still think no. I think Mike Tomlin is an NFL coach. Brian Kelly is a college coach.
But like Cliff, Kingsbury's name was thrown out the second that Oklahoma came available.
Yeah, because he probably wants a raise. Like all the,
okay,
all the
I
reasons
understand,
that,
but understand,
the reasons
but in
that
theory,
we said the Brian
that's part
Kelly
of Chris's
thing
point,
wasn't
though.
Okay.
It's the you know coach of a 9-2 NFL team being linked with a college job. Like, and I know it's agent posturing, but it's not far-fetched because these are very good jobs now.
I agree with that, but I think all the reasons a few weeks ago why we said that that was far-fetched are still the case.
I would say that this has been a good argument my entire lifetime. The security of do you want a regional job or do you want to test your ego in the pros and need to test your ego against the best? Greg Cody has seen this happen with Jimmy Johnson, who had his regrets about ever leaving, but knew himself well enough to say, my ego required for me to test challenges in the pros. But right now, if you tell me, given what my sensibilities are about what success looks like, what freedom looks like, I'd rather have a college job. I'd rather be Bobby Bowden, have the ability to have 10 years than give me the pressure of all these guys in the pros where Mike Tomlin's about to get stripped down naked when he doesn't have a quarterback. Like he's going to keep trying to do things over the next couple of years, but he could last longer in college sports. That said, the pressure is now getting to college sports where Harbaugh getting 6 years is a bit Harbaugh getting 6 years is an exercise in patience because it's less comfortable in college than it used to be. But the more you increase the stakes and the money in college, the more you're going to make it the same thing that it is in the pros. But I think at this point, if you tell me, wait a minute, I could go to LSU and have not only no salary cap, but total real control over my players where they're helpless. They can't do anything. I've got total control over everything that's happening here. It's not going to be people who are going up against my discipline the way it will be in the pros. Urban Meyer realizing, oh, my shit don't work in the pros.
They can't transfer, though, the players.
Yeah.
The players can leave the school.
That's huge.
Yes, they can transfer, but still, you don't have a salary cap, and you have control over who you're getting. There's not a general manager there bothering you. You're running the franchise for a region, and you're playing games on Saturday that feel an awful lot like the ones on Sunday. And you're being paid more than 26 of the 32 NFL coaches. Like, to me, the college job has always been just about as desirable as the pro job.
Right.
And now it's more so than it used to be.
The gap is closed. It's the closest that it's ever been, where you, if you're a college coach, you can use the NFL as leverage. If you're an NFL coach, you can use the college game as leverage. So it's the closest it's ever been, Dan. Can you imagine what a school would pay for Jimmy Johnson right now? Like, can you imagine?
Well, not Jimmy Johnson.
Yes.
Not Jimmy Johnson.
Oh,
not at 78.
Not now. Are you saying Jimmy Johnson today?
No, not now.
Yeah, right now.
No, not now.
I mean, 10 years ago, yes.
And the Steelers should sign Terry Bradshaw.
What are you doing with Jimmy, man? He's a young 78. I told you that.
I mean, Bob Stoops is coaching.
Yeah. I love that. The Barry Alvarez plan of just give me the bonuses and the Bob Stoops deal of just be Oklahoma ambassador.
It's great.
Bob Stoops coming in. It's like, and no matter how unseemly college football or college sports are, or or just the commercialization in general of amateurism is, I think all of us were like, yeah, that's right. Bob Stoops should be the interim coach there. They've got a resident legend over there. Just have him come in and coach a bowl game.
Best available Stoops.
And Barry Alvarez should be the Notre Dame interim head coach.
Maybe.
I'm not even sure he's the best available Stoops.
I don't think that's true. Jimmy can't get it done at 78. I mean, Coach K is 75. He's still coaching.
He's retiring.
So what? He's young. Jimmy's been retired for 20 years. He's relaxed. He's ready to go.
What is the argument? Let me understand.
I think Notre Dame or Oklahoma would pay Jimmy Johnson whatever he wants, and Nick Saban would love that, to come back and be their head coach.
We're not entertaining his Jimmy Johnson thing, are we? Seriously?
We were having a different conversation. We moved on, and then he turned at me and doubled down. He's yelling at me when you guys are the one who objected to the absurdity of a 70-year-old Jimmy Johnson signing a 10-year contract for $15 million a year.
Well, 60-year-old Brian Kelly just signed a 10-year contract. Do we really think he's going to coach all 10 years? Like, just because they're making more money...
Jimmy Johnson hasn't coached in 20 years. Why are you pumping your fist?
I'm ignoring the Jimmy Johnson thing.
Fresh, but yeah.
Tanned and ready.
Just because they're making more money doesn't mean that there's more jobs.
Look who made an appearance
football.
Again. I'm sorry, Jesse.
No, there's a lot less. Although, look at what's happening with Matt Rhule. Matt Rhule, do you think he has the most job security right now? But what Matt Rhule didn't by going to the NFL... So what if he flames out? He still has his resume that says he'll be a success in college football. So he just got himself to a different pay grade.
Right, but Matt Rhule's not Mike Tomlin. Like I'm still on the Mike Tomlin thing. Like I think maybe if you're a Joe Judge or like just someone who hasn't been very successful in the NFL, like going back to college, not going to be a huge step down for you.
Like Petrino looked at it as a step up. I think the problem in all of it is like I work off the assumption that the pros is still the pros and the top of the industry, but I don't know what kind of money they make. I do know that their job security is a lot worse than it would be in college, but I don't know what job security in the SEC is going to be when Dan Mullen has a bad season. There are going to be a hell of a lot more Dan Mullins than Nick Sabans in the new version of the SEC. So I don't necessarily have all the data. It does seem like Lincoln Riley's got a pretty sweet gig, though.
I want to attack a couple of things that have happened during the course of this segment. One of them, Chris Cody, is your father, I believe, did not get enough credit for being the generational king patriarch of combining two words when he took Michigan man and made it Michiman when it came to Jim Harbaugh. That did not go unnoticed. Also not going unnoticed is that Billy Gill, who doesn't appear to have any interest today in anything other than causing riots and being in the middle of riots, has contributed only a muffled sound from behind a mask in agreement to what? I want to know what you were specifically agreeing to. It's the only sound I've heard you make this segment.
It was the Jimmy Johnson thing, and Greg and I both at the same time said he's fresh.
No one's fresher.
Right. Hello.
Put it on the poll at Lebatard Show. Do you think of freshness when you think of 78 years old?
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call. click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.